Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. We have a guest this week. It is Rick Adams. He is running for State House in the 41st District. Jasmine, that is my district. That is my State House seat, and he is running in a primary against Mary Lou Marzi. And we are having him on to talk about why he's running, kind of what are the issues that animate him, what does he think he can get accomplished. I thought his interview was great. He's very well-spoken. He had insightful answers that weren't the same things that everybody says to all of the questions about what do you think you can accomplish that I thought was really good. How did you think Rick did? What do you think about his campaign?
Yeah, I love young Dems, and I think a lot of times young people have a lot of energy, but I think what Rick also has is very good knowledge and understanding of the legislature from working in politics and representing the Kentucky Democratic Party as their lawyer. So I think he's extremely knowledgeable and a really good candidate.
I agree. I mean, just to be straightforward about it, I'm a Rick supporter. If you're a regular listener to the show, sometimes Allison Wiseman sits in for Jasmine, and she is on the campaign staff, I think, for Rick. So that's the situation you're walking into with this interview, just to be straightforward about it. But we have other things we're talking to you guys about on the show this week. The first thing we're going to talk about are KREF reports. The first quarter KREF reports are in, so always lots of insights to get to here. Jasmine's going to talk to us about some of the Republican primaries that are shaping up for legislative seats across the state. Some are very interesting. Some are some very insightful things into what is going on in the Republican Party here in Kentucky that we can glean from how some of these races are kind of happening. And the last thing is that Mayor Greenberg here in Louisville, he delivered his budget address, so we have a little bit of information about what's going to shape the 2024, or I guess 2025 fiscal year budget for the city of Louisville. So, without any further ado, Jasmine, let's talk about KREF reports. So this is the first quarter report. This always happens, you know, and this is like kind of one of the first kind of glimpses we have about how much money all these legislative, candidates have to spend this time. So the top raisers across all candidates include Robert Stivers, who raised $404,000, Philip Wheeler, who raised $223,000, Christian McDaniel, who raised $196,000, David Givens, who raised $194,000, and Ed Galrain, who raised $196,000 as well. Jasmine, do you know what all five of those people have in common?
They are Republicans.
Running for Senate, which is wild.
Yes.
Like that's they are all Republicans. They are all running for Kentucky State Senate. So that is where the money is flowing. Of course, there are lots and lots of other people who raised plenty of money in their races. But yeah, that was something that kind of stuck out to me, was across every race, every candidate, the mm-hmm. five people who raised the most
and
money.
They're mostly incumbents, but not all.
Right.
And we'll talk about that later.
Yes, we will. We will talk about Ed Galrain, and actually later on in this segment too. So the highest raising Democrat this quarter was Ben Reno Weber, who is not running to represent anywhere in Frankfort. He is running for Metro Council here in Louisville. He is an incumbent, but I guess he is technically running for re-election because he was elected in a special election, but he does have a primary, pretty important primary there against Taylor McGovern Ucellus here in my Metro Council seat. So he raised $116,000. The next highest Democrat who raised money was David Yates, also in the Senate, who raised $101,000.
You've got some hotly contested primaries over there.
It is one of those years. One of those years for sure. We haven't had a primary for a seat in Frankfort in quite a while. So this is the first one that the Highlands District kind of has had for a while. But we often have hotly contested local races. The Metro Council 8 has been contested three straight times in very heavy primaries. So we're at it again, for sure. The next thing I wanted to talk about is self-funders. Self-funders are people who give themselves money. The candidates who self-funded themselves the most included these two people named Duval. They're from Bowling Green. They're from Warren County. Robert Duval is a state representative, and Brandy Duval is I believe, is already a Commonwealth attorney there in Warren County. I think that they are related. I didn't really get two really good pictures of them, and I don't want to embarrass myself by taking a guess as to their relationship. Could be married, could be, you know, son and daughter, or father and daughter. I don't know. It's one of those things that you could get in a lot of trouble, and I probably will, with the Republicans there in Bowling Green. But it seems like they're a wealthy family there in Warren County that are funding their election to the state legislature and to the Commonwealth attorney position as Republicans there in Warren County. Brian Adams is high up on the list. He is running for Metro Council in like J-Town and Fern Creek area. Donna Dixon, I did not write down who Donna Dixon is, but she gave herself $25,000, and Matthew Butler are other people in the top five. Robert Duval is the only candidate in the top five for self-funding who is running for state legislature. That's kind of unusual. Donna Dixon, Matthew Butler, and Brian Adams are all running for, I believe, Metro Councilor, maybe Commonwealth Attorney in different elections there. Ed Galrain is also a significant self-funder. I didn't have the number written down totally, but it's up there. It's up there. He gave himself a good amount of money. Double-check that. I'm going to write this. He gave himself $19,600. All right, I have that handy. There you go. Okay, organizations who gave themselves or who gave more than $20,000 to candidates included, first and foremost, the Charter Spectrum Employee PAC, which does communications. Charter Spectrum. You probably heard about the cable company. They gave mostly to Republicans, but did mix it in with some Democratic leaders. The Kentucky Realtors PAC, who did also primarily give to Republicans, but also lots of Democrats, including some Democrats that weren't in leadership. So they did spread around the wealth there. The KDA Bourbon Trail PAC, again, very similar situation, mostly Republicans, but did spread some money around to Democrats, especially ones that are more well-connected leaders, and then also people who have a high profile. The Kentucky Realtors PAC, again, mostly Republicans, but lots of Democrats. And then the Optometric PAC, which gives a lot of money always. I don't know why the optometrists are so involved in politics. I guess it's a highly regulated industry. I don't know. Couldn't tell you. But they also gave mostly to Republicans, but then a few Democrats in leadership. And then the last group that gave more than $20,000 were the Kentucky Chamber PAC. And that was all to Republicans. They did not give any money to Democrats this time around. It makes sense, Jasmine, that most of the money that is the PACs are spending are flowing to Republicans because they are in control of everything. It's nice to give money to Democrats, I guess, but if you want to like lubricate the legislation's way through the Frankfurt's halls of power, it runs through the Republicans. So giving money to those folks is the smartest thing to do there. So PACs, that's all the PACs. Anything to say about any of that, Jasmine?
Only that I just recently heard that the optometrist PAC gives a lot of money. I heard that for the first time like a few weeks ago, yeah. And I guess it's true, and I don't particularly know why, but.
You know, there are some ones that kind of make sense. Like the realtors, like real estate is so heavily regulated.
Right.
And there's so much about like with zone, like local and state government. There's so much that goes through real estate. The realtors being heavily involved, you know, that makes sense. Bourbon Trail and the distillers are so important to Kentucky and also very heavily regulated and have a lot of things they're trying to get done or not get done. We've talked about issues involving their taxes, involving, you know, whiskey fungus and all this kind of stuff. And so obviously they're going to be heavily involved. I don't know if we've ever talked about eye doctors on the show once, Jasmine. I don't know. This may be the first time. So if you are an eye doctor who knows why they are so involved, let us know. Okay. Individuals who gave more than $10,000 include William Carstangen, who's the CEO of Churchill Downs. He gives to everybody. He gives lots of money and he gives it to everybody. Not very discerning. Not a lot of political or ideological specificity in his giving. He is giving money to the folks, I guess, who he likes, or maybe just to the people who he feels like, you know, he can influence, which is what you do when you give money to candidates. The next highest one is Christy Brown, very important Democratic family in Kentucky. You know, the Brown Foreman Company. She's an heir to that family's fortune. She only gives to Democrats, and she also gives very generously to progressive causes. She was one of the main funders to the Defeat Amendment 2, you know, campaign a couple of years ago. Garen Colvin is another person who gave quite a bit of money. He is the CEO of St. Elizabeth's Hospital up there in Northern Kentucky. He only gave to Republicans, many of whom were Northern Kentuckians. And Jasmine, this will be in your segment, but also some of those more like business-friendly, normal, non-liberty Republicans out there in Northern Kentucky. So he's been a heavy funder of those candidates. Hal Heiner, maybe a name that we are familiar with as somebody who at one point ran for mayor of Louisville as a Republican. He gave to Republicans only, and one thing that stood out to me, you know, he's a person that many people in Louisville be like, oh, he's a very reasonable guy. He would have made a great mayor. He gave a max contribution to Josh Calloway. So if that's something you need to know about Hal Heiner, that's something you know now. He is the type of person who gives $2,000 because he really likes Josh Calloway. Sandra Frazier, the other side of the Brown Frazier, or the other side of the Brown Foreman Company, she gave, and it was split pretty evenly. The Frazier family used to be basically Republicans only. Like back in the Bush era, they were like a very, very important Republican family in Louisville, basically like very key to the Republican successes. And it is a little bit surprising that their money now flows pretty much evenly to Republicans and Democrats, if not a little bit more on the Democratic side. I think that to me is a very clear difference between politics in that era and this one, and the type of people who support Democrats now versus who supported Democrats back then. And so that's the Frasers. They're high on that list. Mary Gwynne Wheeler is also on that list. She is the wife of David Jones Jr., who he is the heir to. Well, he is the son of the Humana founder, has a lot of money from that. David Jones Jr. also was at one point the chair of the school board here in Jefferson County. So, you know, they give money very generously to Democrats always. And the other two people I had on this list who gave more than $10,000 are Stephen Riley and Emily Bingham, who they are married to each other. The Binghams are, you know, very important family. Emily Bingham's been on the show. She talked to us about her book, which was about my old Kentucky home. As a historian, a very good author in her own right, but also is the heir to a significant fortune, and is very upfront about that. That's a story that's runs through many of her books. Stephen Riley is her husband. He's an entrepreneur. He also is successful in his own right, but they have access to a lot of family money as well. They both give to Democrats exclusively. Stephen Riley, I thought it was interesting. He gave $500 to both Rick Adams and Mary Lou Marzian, so he's, you know, dividing it down the middle there. So. Okay, there you go. Those are the individuals I wanted to mention. 20 candidates from Metro Council have raised more than $10,000, and 123 candidates for state legislature have raised more than $10,000. There are 11 folks on the state house side that have raised more than $100,000. So there's a lot of money flowing through this time. I mean, a lot of money for Kentucky. There are other states where they would laugh at that, but that is a lot of money for Kentucky. There are some candidates who've spent a lot of money, including Philip Wheeler, Don Schickel, Robert Stivers, and Christian McDaniel. Again, mostly Republican senators. Christian McDaniel does have a race that's pretty significant, I think. You know, that is a race that up in Northern Kentucky that I think will get a lot of attention. The other folks on this list, though, they are high dollar spenders on Republican candidates. They raise a lot of money and then they give money to other Republican candidates or to party organs like their state party, like county parties, like local parties. So they are raising and developing their party organs, which that's how you do politics. That's a good way to do it. They're doing it the right way there. So what does all this mean, Jasmine? I mean, I kind of said it already, but most of the money that is flowing through Kentucky politics these days is going to Republicans. Those Republicans are working hard to spread their wealth, but Democrats do have a few significant high-dollar individual spenders in their corner, but they do face a very significant disadvantage when Andy Beshear is not the name on the top of the ballot. He is a huge fundraiser, and his name gets money from all kinds of places. This is also similar to just, like, the politics of Kentucky. Democrats struggle when it's not Andy Beshear. And that is kind of the situation we are facing this time. But, you know, it is a dynamic that we have seen before, and we probably will continue to do. And money isn't everything in politics, but it's a very important thing. So, Jasmine, with all that said, anything else you have to say about KREF?
I think you covered it well.
All right. I appreciate it. Jasmine, tell us what we need to know about these Republican primaries.
I feel like primary season snuck up on us quickly after the legislative session. So we figured that we would talk about some of these GOP primaries because some of these candidates are going to end up being our elected officials in Frankfort. The one that I think I have probably heard the most about, I don't know if this is true for you, Robert, but the race I've heard the most about is Ed Massey versus TJ Roberts. Is that true for you?
It certainly is. Yeah, that's a big race up there.
Yeah, so Massey is a lawyer who held the District 66 seat until 2022 when he was defeated by a more liberty-branded Republican, Steve Rawlings. This is a Boone County district that goes all the way up to the Indiana and Ohio border. Rawlings is now running for state senate, which leaves that seat open. And Massey is a pretty typical Trump supporting Republican. I wouldn't call him one of the most moderate ones. He was just a pretty standard Republican, and he had a chairmanship when he was in the House. But TJ Roberts, who is also an attorney, is very far right. He's already gotten press for making anti-Semitic comments online, for shaking hands with a neo-Nazi, Richard Spencer, and making other very poor taste online posts. Roberts also has the support of Congressman Thomas Massey, who is also very far right, and Peggy Houston Kneeneighbor is the Democrat in the race who will face Massey or Roberts in that race. And so that one, I think, is one to watch because Ed Massey does have the name recognition there, but he was unseated in 2022. But Steve Rawlings was maybe a more palatable version of this, like, Liberty Republican, whereas TJ Roberts is a little more, like, loud.
Not just loud, but also, like, really weirdly inconsistent. Like, he's called himself, like, an anarcho-capitalist, and he said some really, really weird
stuff.
Yeah,
it's, like, honestly just really bizarre.
And it doesn't have, like, a clear ideological through line, you know, even for, like, a Liberty Republican or whatever. He just seems a little unhinged.
He's made apologies for some of the things that he's said, sort of denouncing some of it, but leaning in to some other things. I saw some answers to a questionnaire where he said that was talking about white people being discriminated against. It was a question about, you know, do you think discrimination is real? And he had a really strange answer to that. And it's honestly just a really strange race. And I'm not sure. I don't know. But those people vote for Thomas Massey, and he wins easily, you
Boone
know?
County Republicans are a special bunch up there. Like they they do some strange things. And you know, there's a lot of good folks up in Boone County, but those primaries in Boone County, especially on the Republican side, get to be just strange strange animals. So this is
yeah,
to watch for sure. Yeah.
He's TJ Roberts is also really young. He's only 26, I think. And so maybe that plays into it as well. Maybe a lack of experience. So we'll see what happens in Boone County. There are some other Northern Kentucky Republicans who have big primaries. House District 69, who District 69 is now represented by Steve Doan. He defeated Adam Koenig in that same 2022 primary. Koenig was a more moderate Republican, and Doan now faces Diane Brown, who is a homeschool mom who has the endorsement of the Chamber of Commerce. And House District 60 is Marianne Proctor, who also won her seat in that same wave. And she faces Christopher,
I think it's Pavesi.
Pavesi?
Yeah, I think that's
who is a retired engineer. And I believe her opponent also has the chamber support as well. The Liberty Republicans, who defeated incumbents in 2022, you know, they don't have the support of these establishment organizations, and they're trying to unseat them 2 years later.
It's going to be really interesting to see the dynamics and how they've been at play up there, because I do think like a lot of the kind of like establishment incumbents didn't do as much. They weren't as like hungry, right? Whereas sometimes people who are challenging work a lot harder. I think we'll see if that is the dynamic that happens, and if that causes some of the more moderates to be able to take on some of these Liberty challengers in a more serious way this time around.
Yeah, and there's one other one that's kind of similar, but not in the same area, and that's in House District 50, who is represented by Candy Mazzaroni, and she has also become part of that Liberty wing of the Republican caucus, and she has also drawn an opponent with chamber support, who is a school board member, and that's Andy Stone. So that's another one to watch, I think, that's similar to some of those Northern Kentucky races. There are also a couple House races who are moderate Republican incumbents trying to hold on to their seats. In House District 19, Michael Meredith, he carried the sports betting bill after Adam Koenig was defeated. Koenig was the one who was kind of championing that issue until he lost. And then Michael Meredith carried the bill. And he's also the chair of the House Banking and Insurance Committee. He has an opponent. He faces Kelsey Rock, who is a dairy farmer. And then in House District 45, Killian Timoney, who is probably one of the most moderate Republicans in the legislature. He's often been against some of the anti-LGBTQ bills and has largely supported public education. He faces someone named Thomas Jefferson in his district, which is Lexington and part of Jessamine County. And in both of those races, two conservative PACs called Make Liberty Win and Commonwealth Educational Opportunities have supported the challengers in those races. And then we have a three-way Senate primary that I wanted to mention, because I think this is probably the biggest Senate race to talk about. And that's, Robert's already mentioned one of the candidates, Ed Gallarine versus Aaron Reed versus incumbent Adrian Southworth. So the chamber is actually backing Ed Gallarine, while the Liberty PACs have split endorsements between Aaron Reed and Adrian Southworth. Kentucky Right to Life have also endorsed both Reed and Southworth. So the Liberty Republicans seem to be split there. And the Kentucky Right to Life, who I think sometimes endorses establishment Republicans, sometimes endorses more far-right Republicans. I think it just depends. They're also splitting there. Ed Gallarine is a farmer. Aaron Reed owns two firearm-related businesses and is a former Navy SEAL. And, of course, Adrienne Southworth was elected back in 2020. She has kind of been part of the election integrity tour.
Yeah.
And she started law school while she was getting elected to the legislature, and she graduated from law school in 2023. So she is a lawyer.
I didn't know that. There you go. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So that's who we have in Senate District 7. So Ed Gallarine has raised a lot of money. And so if voting goes the same way that
the money goes,
the endorsements have kind of gone, some of the more conservative Republicans, their votes may split, and Ed Gallarine may win this election. But Adrienne Southworth does have, you know, a lot of name recognition
and incumbency
there at this point. Yeah. So I think that's an interesting one to watch.
It's a very interesting race. You know, I think Adrienne Southworth gets lumped in with a lot of the other, like, Liberty folks in the House in Boone County, even though she is quite a bit different. I would say she's a little bit
different.
She's more of, like, a conspiracy theorist. Like, that's the thing that's annoying about her, I think. Whereas, like, she's actually pretty moderate on, like, a lot of other issues. And, like, other Liberty people are, like, just really into guns and private schools. And, like, I think that they are, even though they are kind of heterodox Republicans that don't always go along with leadership, there is a significant difference between Adrienne Southworth and a lot of the other Liberty Republicans, which may lead to why there is a bit of a split in that district. The Gallaranes are very well known out there, and I think that's like Oldham and Shelby County.
I've been to Gallarane Farm.
Been to Gallarane Farms many times. I've got a lot of good. I mean, and I really like it there. It's a great little pumpkin patch there. My kid really loves it out there. So I mean, you know, I know that they're conservative Republicans, but, you know, so are the Hubers in Indiana, and at least these folks are from Kentucky. So, you know, that is what it is.
Support the conservative Kentucky farm.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So
not the Indiana
one. Yeah, that's right. But and you know, he seems, even though we probably disagree on most issues, he seems a little bit more like normal. So
yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens out there in that district, which is over several counties that abut Louisville. Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone knows of a progressive pumpkin patch, let us know.
Maybe we should start one, Jasmine.
A few other, there are more primaries than this, but I listed a few others here to watch. One is House District 10. That is Josh Calloway versus Julie Cantwell. Cantwell is endorsed by Better Schools Kentucky and the AFL-CIO, so she is certainly running as a more moderate Republican. And Josh Calloway, I think, is maybe the most conservative person in the House.
I would say that. And you know what? I did my metrics for that recently. I think that's correct. And this is also this is a pretty significant development in the like the labor movement here in Kentucky, which has basically exclusively funded Democrats in the past. And I think they are moving towards, you know, funding some Republican challengers who are more aligned with their values in some of these uncontested races, which, I mean, from their perspective is how you survive. So,
right.
You know, that's where that is. We'll see if that pays off in some of these districts.
Mm-hmm. And then House District 29 is an open seat due to Kevin Bratcher leaving the legislature. So Debbie Peden is a JCPS teacher. She's endorsed by Americans for Prosperity, which is a PAC. And her husband is James Peden, who is a former Louisville Metro Council member who also ran for state Senate. Also in that race is Chris Lewis, a longtime Metro Council legislative aide, and then running as well is Wyatt Allison. So there's a three-way Republican primary in that race, and there's also a three-way Democratic primary. So Lots of people running to replace Kevin Bratcher in Louisville.
He's been there for a very long time, so there's probably a lot of people in the district that are like, whenever Kevin Bratcher decides to leave, I'm going to run. And they are all running this time. So,
yeah, I've seen a lot of... I hang out in District 29.
You're a big Highviewian. Yeah, that's.
Yeah. So I've seen a lot of Debbie Peden signs in the area. But I'm interested to see who comes out of both of those primaries. You know, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll talk about some of the Democratic primaries as well. House District 55 is Kim King versus James Toler. And I mentioned this one just because Kim King faced opposition last cycle and held onto her seat with 55% of the vote. It was a pretty close race. And there were PACs supporting her opponent and running like attack ads against her. She faces a different opponent this time, though, James Toler, who just changed his registration from Libertarian to Republican in 2023, and he's worked in transportation. And I don't really know what it is about Kim King. She's voted very conservatively, so I don't know like why she keeps getting like Liberty opposition, because she hasn't necessarily voted with the most moderate Republicans, but she has opposition again.
You've
maybe because she's a woman, I don't know.
A lot of them are up there. Yeah, that, but you have mentioned quite a few of the races up there in Northern Kentucky, and the Republican or the Democrats I know that pay attention to Northern Kentucky or who are in Northern Kentucky the most, they pointed to this one as the race probably to watch most closely. I hear what you're saying, but Kim King has kind of like, well, no, I guess it's, I, you know what? It isn't Kim King.
No, it's Kim Mosier and Kim Banta.
Kim Banta. Yeah.
Vote more moderately than Kim King does. Yeah, is pretty lock and step with.
Yeah, maybe they just don't like
with the caucus.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I'm thinking of Kim Banta. So there you go. I don't know what it is then. Maybe it is because she's a woman.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe someone in District 55 can tell us what's up there. House District 91 is Bill Wesley versus Daryl Billings. Wesley is very similar to Josh Calloway in ideology, and he is also one of the most conservative members in the legislature, very conservative evangelical. And this is actually a rematch from 2022, where Wesley actually beat Billings very easily. But this time, James Comer, who is a congressman, and Congressman Andy Barr have both endorsed Daryl Billings. And so, you know, those are a couple big name endorsements. I don't know if he had anything like that last time. But he seems to be running hard in Eastern Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. That's Moorhead, I believe. Yeah.
Senate District 1 is Lynn Beckler versus Jason Howe. So Lynn Beckler is a former very conservative House member who was defeated by Jim Gooch when they were pitted against each other in redistricting. And he's now challenging Jason Howell, who is running for his second term in the Senate. So I just think this one is interesting because it's a former House member. So there's probably some name recognition there, but he did lose his House seat. And so, and you know, a Senate district is larger than the House district. So I don't know if Lynn Beckler will be successful, but Jason Howell is only a one-term senator. So I think that's one to look at out in Western Kentucky.
Definitely. Well, thanks for going through all those, Jasmine. I only knew about half of those, so I'm now way more informed than I was before. So thank you for bringing us all of that. It should be a really interesting primary season. I have to tell you, I really prefer primary elections to general elections just because it's way less stress. Like, I'm just like, who's going to win? Who's going to win? In primaries, I'm like, generally, like, okay, I either like or don't like everybody running against each other. So it's less stressful for me and it's more interesting. But yeah, now I'll know what to watch for when it happens. Last thing to talk about today, Jasmine, is Mayor Greenberg's budget address. So that happened last week. I think I wrote, I very smart of me to write last night in my notes. It was not last night. It was a couple of nights ago. His budget is $1.1 billion. And this, I think it's really important to mention that this is the first budget that represents a significant drawdown of federal funds. We no longer have that pandemic era funding that's flowing its way into the city. So, you know, we got a lot of like cool things that were going to be happening, and this is the first one where we have to either find ways to sustain it or cancel a bunch of things that were happening, they're projects that are finished. So it is a little bit more of a depressing budget, but it is a little bit more realistic based on what we're able to fund ourselves. The mayor was very clear about this in his budget address. He talked a lot about prioritization. That word came up lots of times during his conversation with the city. And there were a few things in this budget that did not get funded, which had been funded, you know, all for a very long time. Some of the more high-level projects that got me personally excited include reopening two pools, including Camp Taylor and Algonquin, expanding several libraries across the city, and what he's calling Thrive by Five, which is a first peek of the mayor's plan to expand Universal Pre-K. Very slim on details. I'm a little interested to see where the funding is going to come from, but at least he's talking about it, and I think that is a good thing. Other items of interest include new approaches from the city government towards transportation, including creating a new city department of transportation and a new economic development authority, which is, you know, we change the economic development authority and move all the time for whatever reason, and this would be another one, and also a significant raise for city employees, which, is in the mayor's budget and I feel like likely to get funded by the Metro Council as opposed to the, raise for teachers on the state side, which did not get funding from the state legislature. The mayor also talked at length about how external agencies needed to go through a standardized process for applying for funds. This is, if you have ever been involved in applying for funds from in Metro budget, it is like certain people play by some rules because they have been getting their checks forever and their executive director is like, I don't want to have to fill that out. I've never had to fill that out before. And they're like, well, we can't not fund you because like you do really important work. And it is a very awkward dance that the city has to do. And the mayor came down in his address and said, we are going to have everybody fill out the form. We are going to have everybody go through the same process to get funding. He did say overall external funding would increase, and I think that this is a move towards better government, but we will see if there are some stubborn folks who don't want to fill out the paperwork. So that is always a fun dance that that the city has to deal with. The Courier-Journal reported last week that the budget would cut the funding for the Soil and Water Conservation District here in Louisville. The cuts would be so deep that the office would have to close. Like every county in the state, I think it's mandated in the Constitution, Louisville elects a Soil and Water Commission that is always on the ballot. Most of the time people are like, what the heck do these people do? And they do a lot of free soil testing, a lot of really their conservation-focused programming that actually does do some stuff. But the mayor was very clear to say it was about prioritization and saying we have lots of things that we would like to accomplish with the money that we have, and is, you know, the soil testing that has been available and hasn't changed that much in the past, you know, 50 years or whatever, is that on high on our list of things that we want to fund? So that is his case there. I think that the Soil and Water Conservation District made their case as well, so you should definitely check out what they have to say there. We'll see where it ends up in the budget. The mayor was also very complimentary of state government. We talked about a lot of the pandemic-era funding that was evaporating that went directly to the city, but there was a lot of money that got to the state from pandemic funding or from just over, tax. Our tax accounting, where the city of Louisville is going to get $700 million. That's from HB1 this year that we've talked quite a bit about. So this budget is going to be tough because the direct money from the federal government is disappearing. But we are going to be getting a good chunk of money for special projects in HB1. Budget addresses are never really strong on details, but a lot of the things that I'm the most excited about, including that Thrive for Five, are very short on details. As the budget season evolves, we'll see what emerges from the process, and we will continue to pay attention as it happens. Jasmine, any questions, comments, concerns, or anything else about the mayor's budget address?
I'm also excited about the idea of reopening pools and expanding libraries, because those are great pro-social activities, and it was really disappointing when some of them had to close a few years ago. And of course, I think Thrive by Five sounds like something that will be fantastic. I guess my questions are about the soil and water conservation and what, if any, like consequences of that closing would be, and like what work they do and like how that would get absorbed by something else. I know we have good water here, but
that's the water company, which is very
right.
Very
but is it, yeah, is it conserved properly? What?
No, it's complete. Anything the water company does, I don't believe any of it's funded through the Soil and Water Conservation Agency. I think mostly what they do is like soil testing. If you want to plant like a garden, or if you have a farm, there are farms in Jefferson County, believe it or not. If you have concerns about, you know, irrigation issues, a lot of the things that the Soil and Water Conservation Agencies do in other counties are around agriculture. And yes, Louisville at Jefferson County does have a significant agricultural presence, but we also have a lot of urban problems that have things that are going on. The Soil and Water Conservancy doesn't do nothing. They do things. They do things that are important. How the work would be absorbed, what it would go to, that's something the Metro Council will probably be answering questions about and asking questions about, and we will report what the answers are when we get them.
Okay.
All right, well, I guess that's it for this part of the show. Let's get to our interview with Rick Adams.
Rick Adams is a candidate for state representative in District 41. He's a lawyer and serves as deputy general counsel for the Kentucky Democratic Party. In that capacity, he's taken part in lawsuits about gerrymandering, Louisville's Fairness Ordinance, and the Open Records Act. Rick is a graduate of U of L's law school, and this is his first run for office. So, Rick Adams, welcome to my Old Kentucky podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. We are excited to have you on the show to talk a little bit about your race. Just by way of getting started, kind of just talk to us a little bit about your background and, you know, why you've ended up running for this seat.
Yeah, thanks. So me and my wife, Emma, we live in Deer Park. We met at Center College, and then I come up here for law school at U of L. I clerked for a federal judge after law school, and now, in addition to working as the deputy general counsel for KDP, I work at Kaplan Johnson Abadi and Byrd, and I've been really fortunate to be able to work with some really talented lawyers over there. I do commercial and constitutional litigation, and have been involved in some really interesting, sometimes bad lawsuits, trying to overturn some of the bad stuff coming out of the General Assembly. As Jasmine mentioned, the Fairness Ordinance, we're suing about SB 150. We tried to stop the partisan gerrymandered maps, and I do a lot of open records litigation. So that's kind of my background and the experience I'll bring to Frankfort.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's very relevant stuff for sure. It also really helps to stop a lot of this stuff on the front end. So that would be helpful. I guess it's a surprise to everybody that this seat came open, you know, when Josie Raymond decided to run for Metro Council instead of the state legislature this year. There were a lot of people that are kind of wondering what was going to happen. So just talk to us a little bit about what was running through your head. How long after she decided, did you decide to start considering running for the seat? And then what ultimately made you decide to jump in?
Yeah. So first, I want to thank Josie for her years of service in Frankfort. She's done an amazing job representing District 41 and her previous district before that. I believe it was 35. But don't quote me on that. And she's going to do a great job on Metro Council. I mean, this is a really important moment in our city right now. A lot of big things are happening at the Metro Council level. Louisville needs her. I'm excited that she's going to be representing us on Metro Council. Actually, I worked for Josie's first campaign when I was a third year law student. I had just come off working on Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016. And after that, Debbie Sitting lost. And, that was when Republicans took back the majority in Kentucky for the first time in 100 years. I wanted to stay engaged, and I was excited to get connected with Josie, who, you know, a talented, bright young Democrat who, if she wants to, can be a leader in our party for a really long time. And so I was very happy to be represented by Josie. She was doing a great job, and you know, I would have proudly supported her for, you know, as long as she wanted to keep running for the seat. I was as surprised as anybody when she decided to step down. And you know, I started considering it because, you know, I think we need young leaders, especially in the Democratic Party right now, as we're in the super minority and looking to grow back the caucus in Frankfurt and get closer to that majority and eventually take the majority back. We need young people leading that effort. And you know, when we were getting closer to the filing deadline, I was talking to a lot of people like Josie and, you know, other Democratic leaders in the district, and I didn't see any other young Democratic candidates filing, you know, so I decided to throw my hat in the ring. And Josie, the Democrats, and most importantly, the voters of District 41 have been really supportive and encouraging ever since.
Just before we get to Jasmine's next question, I do have a quick story. Like, the first time I ever met Rick, when he talked about working for Josie's previous campaigns, I remember one of the campaigns, it was maybe 2022, and it might have been 2018, but... it was really hot. It was the summertime. It was like mid-July, and Josie had a canvas, and Rick and I both took a turf, and we showed back up, and like, it was so hot. I'm sure I smelled terrible, but Rick was like just drenched in sweat. It was like the funniest thing. He's just like completely, he's like, I finished the turf, Josie. And I was like, wow, this guy's really dedicated. So now he's working on his own campaign. So he truly is a dedicated walker when it comes to the canvassing type stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's easy when you're walking for candidates like Josie. Like I said, we need people like her in Frankfurt and Metro Council. So happy to do it.
Yeah. So, you know, we heard in your first answer about your experience working in politics. You've worked in Kentucky politics for several years, and you understand the situation that Democrats face in the legislature. So why do you want to serve in the super minority, and what do you think you can accomplish serving in Frankfurt?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So we've knocked over 5,000 doors in this campaign. We've had a lot of great conversations, and that is definitely the question that I get asked the most. Why do you want to go to Frankfurt? Republicans control everything. You're in the super minority. And my answer is that's exactly the reason why I want to go. Emma and I love living in Deer Park. We love Louisville and, you know, the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We're going to be here for a long time. We're going to raise a family here. And we don't want to live in a state that is controlled by an increasingly extreme Republican supermajority. I mean, since 2016, they have, you know, attacked the civil rights of marginalized groups. The first thing they did was pass right to work and repeal prevailing wage to make it harder to make a living in our state. And this is just... the Republican supermajority doesn't share our values, and I don't think they share the values of most Kentuckians. So we want to be a part of working to change that situation. Of course, there are legislative goals I want to accomplish and important policies that Democrats want to see passed, and I'm going to be working on those every day. Stuff like fully funding public education, building universal pre-K, protecting women's reproductive rights, expanding access to healthcare. But we can't ultimately do those things until we grow the caucus and turn that super minority into a minority, and then eventually win back the majority. And I have no illusions that that's going to happen in one election cycle or even two. It's going to be a long-term effort. And I think I'm the candidate in this race that's most invested in that. But also we have to understand that while we are in the super minority right now, we need coalition builders that can work across the aisle to get stuff done now. The stakes are too high to waste safe Democratic seats like District 41 is on people that, you know, will go down and make, you know, throw bombs and introduce stunt legislation that, you know, might make us feel good, but doesn't really move the ball down the field. And sometimes in the supermajority, your role is to try to make the majority's good bills better and bad bills less bad. You know, we saw just this legislative session, you know, Democrats and Republicans come together on some important issues. And, you know, I look at the Momnibus bill, which is a great bill that's going to expand access to healthcare. Democrats and Republicans worked on that bill, came together to defeat poison pill amendments to it. That's the kind of stuff that I want to do if elected to represent District 41. And we're going to have a really good opportunity to start building those coalitions starting on May 22nd, right after the primary. We have this terrible school voucher amendment that's going to be on the ballot. And a lot of Republicans voted against that in Frankfurt. I expect a lot of Republican voters to vote against it on the ballot in November. We need people that are working on productive ways to work across the aisle on issues like that.
That's a really good answer. I mean, we ask a lot of people that question, and that is, I don't know, that's the answer you want to hear.
It's comprehensive.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, I do think, I heard you mention several issues in that, including like school funding, you know, rights to abortion care, you know, all kinds of stuff that you mentioned there. And those are the issues that we hear about a lot because they are the ones that come up the most often in state government in Frankfurt. It's the things you're going to have to work on no matter what. But sometimes those issues differ a little bit from the things that animate you the most. And I mean, I think you mentioned at the top, you've worked on like constitutional legal challenges and like, you know, law and stuff is that stuff that's important to you. That stuff that animates you. What are the issues that you care about the most personally, and tell us why?
Yeah, so I'll give you four, and I'll keep them relatively short. So the first one, public schools and public education, and in part that's just because it's such an urgent issue right now in Louisville and statewide. You know, I'm a proud graduate of Kentucky Public Schools. You know, I think our public schools are essential. I think there's a clear vision between the two parties right now. Democrats want to invest heavily in public schools. I would absolutely support Governor Scheer's proposed 11% raises for teachers. We need to fully fund transportation to our public schools. I mean, we're JCPS right now is cutting transportation, depriving our students of opportunities at magnet schools because transportation is not fully funded. And the other side wants to amend Kentucky's constitution to take take resources out of our public schools and give them to exclusive private schools. That's about as stark as a contrast as you can have right now. And I think, you know, if I'm elected, I'm going to be a stalwart defender of public education. Second is actually housing costs. So, you know, in District 41, in across Louisville and across the state of Kentucky, the cost of housing is rising exponentially faster than wages. And it's really putting pressure on, you know, people in our generation. I'm 32. Em and I are fortunate enough to own our home, but we were lucky to do so before the COVID market really made the real estate market go crazy. Most people our age are not that fortunate. And, you know, they've done everything they've been told to do. They went and got a good education. They have a good job. And they want to, you know, get that slice of the American dream and buy a home, but they can't save to it for a down payment when rent takes half their paycheck. And a house that 4 years ago was $200,000 is now $400,000. We have to address that situation. And that's something that I want to be focused on in Frankfurt as well. And then the last or two more, civil rights generally. So that's the constitutional issues that we've been talking about. You know, I'm in federal court defending Louisville's fairness ordinance. We're suing to stop some of the worst provisions of SB 150 in our school system. You know, gerrymandering and ballot access, voter protection issues. You know, these are issues that I've been working on the back end and been, you know, having these debates and these arguments in courtrooms. And I want to take that experience to the front end, as Robert mentioned, and have these fights on the floor of the General Assembly, which will be a lot more effective, a lot faster, and will save a lot of litigation costs. But the last one I want to talk about specifically is I have a lot of experience in government transparency and open records litigation. And I think that's it's not a sexy issue that gets a lot of conversation and it's not on the top of a lot of voters' mind, but it's a critically important issue. It's an issue that affects all others because we can't hold our government accountable if we don't know what the government's doing. So I've filed lawsuits against government agencies run by Democrats, Republicans, all across the Commonwealth to enforce the Open Records Act and make sure our government remains fair, open, and transparent. Several legislative sessions in a row, we've had attempts to amend, some would say gut, the Open Records Act in ways that are not great for Kentuckians. You know, I've been part of the effort with the Kentucky Press Association to try to defeat those bills. We've been successful so far. And we're going to have to keep doing that every legislative session that they try to move more things behind closed doors.
Yeah, open records issues are certainly gaining momentum, you know, as far as like how often they're covered by the media and, you know, people turning their attention to them. So, yeah, I think people do care about government transparency. So it's good to have an advocate for those things in the legislature. Yeah. We also want to talk to you about your district a little bit. You're seeking to represent one of the most Democratic districts in the whole state. What have you learned about District 41 as you've been campaigning? Has anything stood out to you or surprised you about it?
Well, I'll say so. We got a big surprise at the beginning of this or in the middle of this campaign. I don't know if you can tell from the Zoom camera, but I got Bell's palsy in the middle of this, which is like a, it's not a very serious thing, but it affects the nerves in your face and paralyzes. So the left side of my face has been mostly immobile for a lot of this campaign. And I thought that was going to really hinder the what we were able to do. And the voters of District 41 have not cared at all. And they've been very gracious and understanding. And we've had a lot of great conversations and has not slowed the momentum of this campaign at all. But more about the district generally is, you know, what has really stood out to me is how ready people are for a change and willing they are to how willing they are to listen to a first time candidate. We've knocked close to 5,000 doors. We've had a ton of engagement online. We've had a lot of great conversations. And District 41 primary voters are really smart. They're very engaged. They understand what's going on, who their elected leaders are. And they understand that we're in a new era of Democratic politics right now. We and District 41 voters understand we need to send people to Frankfort that can be effective in the supermajority while simultaneously trying to grow the party and grow the caucus. And because that's how we're going to win on the issues that matter to us. It's a little surprising that while we're hearing this from so many voters, we're kind of hearing the opposite from, you know, establishment institutional organizations, a little bit more cautious. They don't want to shake up the status quo. We've received a lot of positive messages from these groups and strong support words and encouragement in private and understand we need to be looking towards the future, but they might be unwilling to say so publicly. So I think there's no doubt in this campaign that my opponent will have more endorsements than me, which might be expected after, you know, a 30-year career. But the good news is that's not where the voters of District 41 are. The voters that we talk to are ready for a change. They're ready for the next generation of Democrat. And I've been very excited and supportive of this campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a real testament to you, I think, coming down with Bell's palsy in the middle of this. It hasn't slowed you down either. I think it's been really impressive the race that you've been able to put together, having, you know, such a serious thing happen to you right at the start of it.
Thank you. I will say before you go, I don't know if you're an NBA fan, but Joel Embiid was recently diagnosed with Bell's palsy.
Yeah.
And he played against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden with Bell's palsy. So if he can do that, then I can definitely go campaign.
That's important. Jasmine and I are in a dynasty NBA fantasy league, and Joel Embiid was like a big get that I had. I made a big trade. So he needs to be good in the future. I'm going to have him for a long time. So that's good to hear that he's still able to play in Madison Square Garden against the Knicks with Bell's palsy. So you mentioned this, and you've alluded to it a few times. So you are facing a significant primary this season. One of the reasons... we're talking to you now. And the person that you're running against held this seat literally for decades prior to her retirement in 2002. That's Mary Lou Marzian. To have it said straight out, you've already kind of talked around it a little bit. What is it makes you the best person to serve as a state representative for this seat?
Yeah, so I think really it's my experience and my legal background. So there's actually a bit of a shortage of lawyers in the Democratic caucus right now. And I think that's a very valuable perspective to have in a legislature. The people that are making laws should have some legal education. And, you know, I have a lot of experience specifically litigating against bills that have been bad laws that have been passed out of the Republican supermajority. You know, we've mentioned, fairness is not out of the supermajority, but, you know, I certainly would be advocating for statewide fairness legislation. But SB 150, the gerrymandering, we've been able to fight back some of these open records bills. So I have a lot of experience fighting on this stuff on the back end. And, you know, I want to take that fight from courtroom to the General Assembly. And I think I'll be ready on day one to do that. You mentioned Mary Lou Marzian, and she represented a slightly different district than District 41. So after the redistricting, it's only about 40% of her old district. She had a long, career. She was my state representative when I was in law school at U of L. But we're in a different era of Kentucky politics. You know, it's not 1994 anymore. Democrats have to be relentlessly focused on the future and rebuilding the party and winning seats that we used to hold but no longer do. And I think to do that, we need to engage young voters. Young voters talk to me every single day about issues like the cost of housing. And, you know, young families, you know, a lot of our friends are having kids and they see the sticker price of childcare. And, you know, all of a sudden, are talking about one of the parents maybe dropping out of the workforce because it'd be less financially detrimental to them for that to happen. You know, we shouldn't be having to make those decisions in Kentucky. And you know, to again, everything that we care about hinges on growing that caucus, growing the Democratic Party, so we can start winning on those issues. And Emma and I are in the same stage of life as a lot of these voters. We understand how hard it is to get ahead. And young people want to see people like them at the table when these issues are being debated. And frankly, you know, I'm going to show up every single day to represent District 41. You mentioned Representative Marzin. She retired in 2022, but she was honestly checked out before that. So she had the worst attendance record in the House in 2022. She missed 19 of 60 legislative days. She missed 19 of 53 days in 2020. She missed most of the special sessions for the tornado relief and the flood relief. She showed up for the votes, but was not there while those issues were being debated and those bills were being formed. And she missed the critical vote to save teachers' pensions from Matt Bevin's infamous sewer bill. And, you know, I asked Mary Lou about these at a recent debate, and her answer was basically that it was not necessary to show up on Mondays and Fridays because there's not a lot of work being done and not a lot of votes being taken on those days. And I just don't think that's the kind of representation we need for District 41. I'm going to show up for work every single day, and District 41 voters can take that to the bank. I will absolutely be there to represent us and be there to respond when Republicans, you know, like the sewer bill, introduce something at the last minute that we might not be expecting that day. You have to be there in Frankfort in person to be able to react in real time to that. So, you know, I encourage everyone to watch the debate. We have it posted on our Facebook page. The Courier and Journal wrote a nice article about it and actually mentioned Mary Lou's statement that she doesn't believe it's necessary to show up on Monday and Friday. And I think it really showed two visions for the General Assembly, but one about what it could be in the future and one about what it has been. And like I said, this Democrats need to be focused on the future. And I think I'm the candidate that's having that conversation during this campaign.
We appreciate you sharing your campaign vision with us. How can people get to know you better or join in on your campaign?
Yeah, so like I said, we've been knocking a lot of doors that we haven't already knocked yours. Hopefully we will soon. But you can sign up to join us and volunteer at rickadamsforky.com. We're also on all your favorite social media sites as Rick Adams for Kentucky, Facebook, Instagram, X now, and YouTube. So check us out. We have a portal on our website where you can message the campaign directly. We're very responsive. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Well, Rick Adams, thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page and listen to our podcast on the podcast app of their choice. We also have a newsletter. You can subscribe to it at tinyletter.com/myoldkentuckynewsletter. And we have a Patreon page where you can support the work that we're doing for as little as $1 a month. You can do that at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast. And last but not least, we're part of the Demcast Network.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week.